Law and You with attorney LeBaron Boone. And now here's your host, LeBaron Boone.
Hello, citizens of the world. Hello, Alabamians. Hello, Montgomeryans. Hello, and I missed it, citizens of the United States of America. It is my job to serve you each week by keeping it legal, and I do it right here on WVAS 90.7 FM. And my job is going to be so simple today. I don't have to do much other than open up the floor and let three of the world leading safety experts, fire safety experts, tell you some things that I think is important. As you know, my job is to serve you by keeping it legal right here on WVAS 90.7 FM. And if you want to join us and if you have any questions, please call at 334-269-6785. This show is about safety and how there are hidden dangers in everybody's home. Well, I have three people, the leading experts in the world, Adrian Butler, Dean Dennis, and David Isaac, who are going to tell you what I've tried to tell you about from their perspective. So let's turn right now to them and get to it. And we'll shortly after we get each one of them to introduce yourself. Gentlemen, Adrian Butler, I want to start with you first, Mr. Ware of our safety organization, the RAF NATO of Australia. I want you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and let your other friends who've come from all over the world introduce themselves as well.
Thanks, LeBaron. I've been involved with the World Fire Safety Foundation now for 15 years, and it's amazing, actually, because only this morning we felt we'd made a really big breakthrough, and I can tell Alabamians with pride that Ed Polk, the state fire marshal, told me something this morning that really is going to make Alabamians a lot safer. Because as you said before, almost every home in the state of Alabama will have fire alarms installed, which we know are dangerously defective. We've actually are on record saying they're deadly and they should immediately be banned and recalled. Now, what the State Fire Marshal is about to do is what my Member of Parliament in Australia did a few years ago. He wrote to the manufacturer of the ionisation type of smoke alarms in his own home and asked them what level of smoke they activated under the Australian standard. And after a year of them failing to answer his question, he gave a speech in Parliament and wrote to the President of the company here in the US. And he wouldn't answer the question. And then we came across a law firm in Montgomery, Alabama, and I believe it's called Beasley Allen.
Yeah, I know those guys.
Yeah, they're pretty good guys. And we have a gentleman by the name of Mr. Boone, not Daniel, LeBaron, LeBaron Boone.
I think I know that guy too.
He's a cool dude. Met him today for the first time. And what Mr. Boone did was the first time anyone anywhere in the world has ever done. He didn't just write to the manufacturer and say, can you tell us what level of smoke the smoke alarms go off at? He forced them to answer the question. And that's why Mr. David Isaac, who you'll meet in a moment, and myself were unable to hop on the plane and come over here, because they settled out of court with a confidentiality order to gag us so that we can't tell the public what level of smoke the alarms actually went off at. But Mr. Isaac is going to follow me shortly. But before that happens, I'd just like to tell you what happened with Mr. Polk, the state fire marshal, this morning. We told him what we're just telling you listeners about, the fact that there's a serious problem with the smoke alarms in all American homes, and we have the key to solving this problem globally in Australia, because the alarms in Australia are exactly the same as the ones sold in the US. So what Mr. Polk has agreed to do as the State Fire Marshal of Alabama is to write to the manufacturers and ask them what level of smoke have the smoke alarms at the State Fire Marshal's office that they've been handing out to the public, what level of smoke have they activated under the Australian standard? And that's the empirical scientific proof that they're not safe. So it takes it out of the realms, it puts it into the realm, sorry, of empirical scientific evidence. And this is why we believe we can once and for all bring these needless fire deaths, I mean, to an end. 62 people have died so far in Alabama this year. Ed Polk was on TV only a week ago where he declared it to be an epidemic of fire deaths. It's an absolute outrage. And the reason people are dying and dropping like flies is because it's an irrefutable fact that the ionisation smoke alarms in almost every home in the US and in Australia, and especially here in Alabama, are dangerously defective. And on that note, I'll pass you over to Mr. Isaac from Standards, the Standards Australia Committee, and he will give you his take on it. Over to you, David.
Mr. Isaac, David, I want to tell you personally thank you for all you've done. You've put your neck out on the line, and obviously you are now a target of a corporate powerful giant who doesn't like people who are willing to come out and fight against their profit. But Mr. Isaac is from Australia. He worked for one of the largest smoke detector manufacturers in the world. And he is very instrumental in, from what we've learned about the documents that Adrian mentioned. In particular, me as the attorney, as he stated, I'm the only lawyer that is not part of the industry on the outside who's trying to hold the industry accountable because of these gentlemen's help. The only lawyer in the world who has ever seen these documents, and the documents say, unrefutable, in my opinion, that this ionization smoke detector is dangerous. And people are going to die because of that danger. So I want the gentleman who also is, in my opinion, instrumental in trying to help educate the public. It's things he can't say that I might can say. But I want him to talk about what he generally learned about ionization smoke detectors. Maybe give us a little quick definition of the two types out there and tell how many approximately are ionization. And talk about the fact that something people don't know, an ionization smoke detector doesn't detect smoke. Explain that, because most people would think I'm crazy and joking if I say an ionization smoke detector don't detect smoke. Mr. Isaac.
Thank you, LeBaron. It's good to be here.
Thank you.
It's good to be in the southern U.S. states, and it's good to be here getting welcomed by all these nice people from Alabama and Montgomery. So, look, it's what LeBaron is talking about is so true. Unfortunately, I was to discover some years ago, approximately 2004, the extent of the danger of these ionization smoke alarms. So what's the difference? Well, an ionization smoke alarm is not really a smoke alarm. Should never have been called a smoke alarm because it cannot possibly see smoke. It cannot possibly respond to visible smoke. It really is a fire detector or a product of combustion detector. It just means it will respond to particulate from a fire that you can't see with your visible eye. We take then the photoelectric smoke detector, and it's a real smoke detector. It physically sees the smoke and gives you a warning when the visible smoke is present in a fire. Now, without getting too technical with you folks, if we go back to how I got involved, I've been involved in the Australian Standards Committees that write all of the standards for Australian smoke detection and warning systems. And most of our standards are specified or referenced in the Australian Building Regulations. So when we go to change an Australian standard, we have to get it past the regulators. So in about 2006, we discovered, to our horror as a standards committee, that the ionization smoke alarms in the Australian standard test were allowed to activate at a smoke level in the room that was about four times what was an acceptable safety level. So on the one hand, we have photoelectric smoke alarms that have to pass what we call a visible smoke measurement. And on the other hand, the ionization smoke alarms didn't have to pass that visible smoke measurement. But what was really frightening was that the smoke level in the test room at the criteria that allowed the ionization smoke alarm to pass the test was something like four times higher than what a normal photoelectric smoke alarm would pass at.
Well, tell me this. I think you told me something that was very simple and you broke it down good, but as a lawyer, I like to get to the bottom line. Do you believe ionization smoke alarms are effective at detecting, in particular, what I've learned, slow smoldering fires? Are they defective in that instance, in your opinion, and are they safe to be in homes?
No, they're definitely not effective, and they are definitely not safe. If I could get one message out tonight to all you fine citizens, is that if you have an ionization alarm in your home, change it for a photoelectric, or at least add a photoelectric. They're not safe. They are, in fact, dangerous because the public have been misled into thinking they're safe. Why do you think they're safe? Because every time you cook the toast or you open the oven door or you light a candle on a birthday cake or open a griller, these ionization alarms sound and they drive you nuts. So what do you most likely do? Probably pull the battery and disable them. Well, because they go off when you cook the toast or open the oven door or light candles on a birthday cake, you think, man, these things must be safe because they go off when I cook the toast. But what you're not aware of is that in the middle of the night, if you have an electrical fault or a cigarette's dropped on a couch or the clothes dryer has a fault or the refrigerator has a fault that causes a slow smoldering fire and that smoke slowly builds up in your house and this toxic gas is forming, you think this thing's going to activate. I have to tell you, the probability of it activating is about 1%. And it will only activate, if you're fortunate, when the fire reaches the dangerous, fatal flaming stage. And I can assure you, when a fire reaches that stage, it is far too late to get your first warning. So I unequivocally tell you that ionization alarms are dangerous and they are not an acceptable risk mitigation.
I'm going to take the local call, since I'm going to start local, not go around the world, but I think I see Lori from Montgomery. Lori from Montgomery, are you with us still?
Yes, I am. I'm wanting to know, how do I know if my smoke detector in my house is any good? I mean, it sounds like it's not, but how do I know which one I have and if it's any good?
Yeah, Lori, if I can answer that, it's Adrian here from the World Fire Safety Foundation. We get asked that question a lot. As a rule of thumb, the only way you'd have a photoelectric detector, which is the only one to have, is if you had made a conscious decision to change. It's almost a 100% chance you have an ionization. And if you take it down and have a look at the back of it, it'll say contains americium-241, which is a radioactive isotope, and there's the radioactive warning symbol on the back. So the first thing you need to do is hop up on a chair, unscrew it, have a look at the back of it, and it will almost definitely say that it's an ionization. And also in America, you put the I on it for ionization. What you need to do is then immediately tomorrow go and buy yourself a photoelectric smoke alarm, which will have the P for photoelectric written on it. And then what you need to do is spread the word and tell all your friends.
Well, thank you for that call. We have an unbelievable team of people. They didn't say it, but they've come over to the U.S. from Australia. They hadn't been living here. They hadn't moved here. They have made a special trip here. I hope to visit a good friend of ours, Russell Ash, who is a firefighter who is also part of this attempt to make the world safer. Dean Dennis, Adrian Butler, and David Isaacs helped. He got the first state to only require photoelectric in the United States of America, and that's what we're trying to do so everybody can be safe, not just in Vermont. And another gentleman who played a role in that is Dean Dennis, and he is the only one from America. He ought to be feeling out of place. We got our Australian buddies here who just jumped off a plane from Australia and have talked to fire marshals throughout this country, in particular Alabama recently. But Dean, why don't you tell us some of your experiences, and I hate to ask you to relive it, but if you can tell how everybody talked about how they got involved and what got you involved, and tell us a little bit about your journey.
Thank you, LeBaron. You're absolutely one of my favorite people because you take this topic so seriously. I had the tragedy of losing my daughter when she was away at college. She died in 2003. There was more than 6 ionization smoke detectors in that house. 2 years later, another friend of mine lost his daughter. There were 17 ionization detectors in that house. So between those two fires with more than 20-plus ionization smoke detectors, there were 8 college-age students that lost their lives. I became aware of this actually when a fire chief from Boston was informing some people about the difference between ionization and photoelectric smoke alarms. And personally, my friend got a phone call from this fire chief, Jay Fleming, and he wanted to know if we knew the difference between ionization and photoelectric. Well, like most of you out there, we didn't have a clue. Well, since then, I do have a clue. For the last 7-8 years, I've studied this topic. What is very shocking, and I want the public to really hear this, that our government, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, has also tested these smoke alarms. They've made public statements that the ionization smoke alarm responds 30 minutes slower than a photoelectric in the type of fire that will likely kill your family as they're sleeping at night. That's a fire that has an extended smoldering stage. You have an electrical short and behind your walls. You have a blanket that smolders for a while, a cigarette and a couch. It will smolder an extended amount of time. An ionization alarm will sound, if it sounds at all, on the average in government testing, 30 minutes slower than a photoelectric. And our government, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, has made public statements that sometimes the ionization will fail to sound at all, even when the room is filled with visible smoke. Now, what's surprising to me is that I've been writing for 7 years to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Our current Secretary of State, John Kerry, 7 years ago, wrote to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. He was ignored. I was ignored. Senator Rob Portman, who at one point in time was being considered for a vice president nomination when Mitt Romney was running, he's written to Consumer Product Safety Commission. And my congressman, Brad Winstrup, has written to Consumer Product Safety Commission. Guess what? Here's what the Consumer Product Safety Commission is good at. Here's what they're consistent at. They ignore everybody. They say they are actively working on it, and they reference the brochure, and they're citing the same brochure for the last 7 and 8 years while they're saying they're actively working on it. So your government-paid employees, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, is turning the back on a major problem. There's over 500 to 1,000 people that die needlessly every year with a known problem.
It's something that you've shown me in the thousands of hours you've worked on reviewing the data, and in my opinion, one of the persons that's most knowledgeable in the world, along with the other three gentlemen you have in this room. But you actually showed me government testing and paperwork that proved it. And I kept saying, what is DNR or DNP? Do you remember that site in which you, what I'm talking about that you can tell us about?
Well, certainly. Underwriter Labs actually started doing some testing because their testing was criticized. They actually compare your cushions at your home that we all know is made with polyurethane foam. In the lab, they don't test foam. They test ponderosa pine sticks and say that's the same as your cushions. Well, we all know that nobody has ponderosa pine sticks for their cushions, but they deliberately take this wood, they cut it into strips, they dry it out for 48 hours, they take all the knots out of it, they get all the resin and tar out of it, then they slowly rise the temperature in their lab and say that this mimics a test with furniture. But it doesn't, because when they were forced to do some testing because the government has exposed them for the alarms not sounding in time in their testing, they decided to actually start doing some testing with cushions. Well, guess what? 10 out of 10 tests, the ionization alarms failed to sound when they were testing foams. And what you saw, LeBaron, was DNT did not trigger. The alarms did not sound at all.
But you pointed out, even though there are many tests they can make it pass, in the tests that's most likely to kill people, as you talked about, slow smoldering fires, even their own tests essentially proved that it wouldn't respond. So why hadn't we done anything? Why do manufacturers continue to sell this? Anybody can answer. Why in the world would they continue to sell this with all this data showing that is dangerous?
And I've got a good answer to that, LeBaron. It's a great question. In 1980, the International Association of Fire Chiefs published a report. It was called the Residential Smoke Alarm Report. They published it in the International Fire Chief magazine. And in that report, they warned that ionization smoke alarms were not safe and that lives were at risk. They told fire chiefs to only recommend photoelectric smoke alarms, and here's the really, really important thing. They warned against combination alarms where you have an ionization and a photoelectric alarm together, because they said, why would you encumber a perfectly adequate photoelectric alarm with the high false alarm problem inherent in ionization alarms? And they told fire chiefs a test that they could do back in 1980, 34 years ago, and that test was actually mimicked. It was done on Good Morning America. Dean Dennis organized the tests, and that test was done, and I mean, over 5 million people see America. A lot of the Alabamians listening in would have actually seen that on Good Morning America a few weeks ago. And in that test, The photoelectric, the two photoelectric alarms went off at 12 and 13 minutes. It was a slow smouldering test. It was exactly what they were told to do 34 years ago. The photoelectrics went off, the two photoelectrics from the two biggest manufacturers went off at 12 and 13 minutes. And the combination alarms didn't go off till the first one went off at 20 minutes, and the next one went off at 49 minutes. Which proves what we've said, that combination alarms, when you combine both the alarms into one detector, you have a serious problem with them. And the ionization alarms, the type of alarm in almost every single home in America, they never went off at all. At 70 minutes, the test room was so dangerous, they pulled the firemen out of the room and closed the test down. So an hour after the photoelectric smoke alarms activated, they stopped the test. And as radical as it seems, you were saying, well, why don't the public know about this? This has been covered up for decades. Tens of thousands of people have needlessly died, and the only law firm in the world that has the answer to this problem is Beasley Allen in Montgomery, Alabama. And this is the law firm that is going to sink the ionization ship. I've been doing this for 15 years, and it needs to be brought to a head before more people are going to die. And you know something? They are going to die because they're in every home. But all we can do is reduce the number of needless deaths. So anyone who's listening to this program, they need to contact Beasley Allen, and they have the empirical scientific test data, the data that we're not allowed to say now because we're under a gag order because the manufacturers have gagged us. It's absolutely disgraceful, and I better not get too worked up. But anyway, and I'll just pass over to David before we close.
And just to add to what Adrian has told you, the real reason why wouldn't these manufacturers who also manufacture a photoelectric alarm, why wouldn't they just simply stop selling ionization and sell photoelectric? The old story, follow the money. If it only costs them $1 to make an ionization alarm and they sell it to you for $8 to $12, that's something like about 800 to 1,200% margin. And if they sell you a photoelectric alarm, that's going to cost them between $2.50 and $5 to make, and then they only sell that for maybe $16 to $20. So you do the maths. There's a lot of money to be made selling ionization smoke alarms, so they don't want to stop selling them, and they won't stop until they're forced to.
10 seconds for anybody got anything else to add. 10 seconds.
Let me jump in real quick. What the public doesn't know is the manufacturers in the early days helped UL design the test. And those tests have not been changed for 35 years. You got to understand that the manufacturers are a client of Underwriter Laboratories, and therein lies another part of the problem.
Well, a country boy like me knows that when you let the fox guard the hen house, you're in trouble. So, hey, guess what? I know I've served you by keeping it legal today. Thank you all again for letting me serve you right here on WBAS 90.7 FM. Until next week, I'll just keep serving you by keeping it legal.
You've been listening to The Law and You with Attorney LeBaron Boone of the Beasley Allen Law Firm. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of WBAS FM or Alabama State University.